Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's program of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes, and I am the host of this program, and I am also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, and we are so excited that you have tuned in for today's live broadcast. If you have never listened to the UR Tennis Network before, congratulations. You have found what we believe is one of the best-kept secrets in the tennis world. We are into our fourth year of broadcasting. We have done over 1,200 hours of interviews with tennis personalities that you probably will not, I should say probably, you will definitely not get to hear about on any major tennis network. And I mean ESPN, CBS, the Tennis Channel, These networks are not going to devote the time that we at the UR Tennis Network devote to the personalities that we engage in on a weekly basis. And these are the personalities that are actually the people that are working hard in the tennis world and that are actually contributing on a daily, a weekly, a monthly, yearly basis to making good things happen for American tennis. These are the so-called, quote-unquote, the grunts, and we're out here to tell their story because we know, as many of you know, that the real world is actually ruled by average people, so why not tell the average people's story? And there are some fascinating things that go on. We are leading up into the the start of the U.S. Open. It is an exciting time for U.S. tennis. It is an exciting time for college tennis as college coaches across America are welcoming in the new athletes into their programs, getting back old athletes, and most of school starts on Monday. And they're coming into a new and different collegiate atmosphere if you're playing Division I tennis. And we're going to find out about that a little more in the coming weeks. On today's show, we have the NCAA Division III Women's Champion, Miss Amy Bryant. Amy's going to come to us. She's going to talk about Emory University's national championship run. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this school knows how to do it. They've done it several times at that Division III level, and we're going to hear about their most recent championship. I want to let you know that we do have other programs, and we are working on even more programs. I've been on the phone in the last week or so with tennis enthusiasts, tennis people that are interested in talking about tennis. And as always, if you think you can do this for an hour a week, get in touch with me at jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. Monday, we have Parenting Aces with Lisa Goodman-Stone. She's out of the Atlanta, Georgia area, and then operating out of the Citadel, the Fortress, American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. Both of those participants in the UR Tennis Network will be at the U.S. Open for the next couple of weeks. Their broadcast will be live from there, and hopefully we'll pick up another couple of broadcasts from there. We added Holding Court with David McIsaac and VJ Paul, and after the U.S. Open, they will be adding more shows. Excited about them. So, UR Tennis Network will continue to add hours of programming here for your listening enjoyment. Now, I want to let you know that there is movement amongst the NCAA Division I conferences. And as many of you know, we covered this a couple of weeks ago. We continue to cover this. We believe here within our network that NCAA Division I tennis, particularly men's tennis, is about to undergo one of the most serious changes it has ever undergone since they added the 4.5 scholarship rule. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then you definitely need to go back and listen to some of our prior podcast episodes. Probably most recently, after the Super Five conferences voted themselves the superpowers that they have now, the autonomy within the NCAA, one of their first orders of business was to allow the Division I tennis to change its scoring format to shorten its experience. In other words, the players, you will no longer get to experience the same match that prior collegiate tennis players have experienced. You will not get to go through the same emotional up and down that your counterparts have gone through. We're shortening this. And as far as I know, it is the only sport within the NCAA field that is being shortened. They are not shortening NCAA football. They are not shortening NCAA basketball. Even track and field meets are not being shortened. But for some reason or the other, the powers that be have decided that NCAA tennis matches are too long. Hooey! If you've ever been to a college tennis match or you're a coach of a college tennis match, there's a story that's told at every college tennis match, and it takes time to develop. We understand this as tennis players, as tennis coaches. So just hold on for the tennis story to unfold and let it tell itself. Don't try to finagle the system and try to retell the story just so you can get it on TV. Now, we know that the top five super conferences, the Pac-12, the SEC, the Big 12, the Big 10, and the ACC, have made a move to get their tennis matches on TV, trying to get these matches to under 3 hours. So then what they've done is they've said no ad scoring, no warm-up with your opponents, and we're shortening the doubles to 6-game sets. This will definitely attract more TV viewers. This will get more people in the stands. Hooey, it's not going to work. And so what has happened is they've already started to create controversy. We already have our first conference out there, the Southern Conference, which will be boycotting this format in the future. They will be playing they will be playing a game pro sets, and they will be warming up with their opponents. They do not agree with the powers that be that this is good for college tennis, and they, along with others, and this is what the grapevine tells me, other conferences will be joining and doing as Johnny Manziel did the other night to the Washington Redskin bench, giving them a finger gesture and saying, we don't like what you're doing here. We're going a different direction here because we believe that our American tennis players need more experience. We are more interested in player experiences than we are fan experiences, and they're on to something. And I firmly believe this, that once these organizations realize that there are more small colleges, that once there are fewer Division I teams that are not going to be on TV, there are more of these teams that are not going to be on TV, that they actually have the power, the ITA, the men's Division I teams here, the Division I women's teams, they're going to be in some serious trouble. They have put themselves on an island. And we'll see how often people want to visit that island. So we've got many guests lined up in the future weeks that are going to come on and talk about this. As many of you know, we're moving towards the U.S. Open. The ITA recently released its qualifiers that are going to be playing the U.S. Open. And I know, Coach Bryant, you're out there, and I'll get you on in just a second here. I wanted to let you know just a couple of things that the ITA has released here, and these are exciting things, and we're excited about this for college tennis on certain levels, disappointed in others. Recently here, as many of you know, this year is the American Collegiate Invitational. This is an event that will be held at Flushing Meadows. during the U.S. Open. Will be held September 4th through the 6th at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. The winners of the American Collegiate Invitational will receive main draw wild cards into the 2015 U.S. Open. So this is an event with the USTA said, let's go out and get the great American collegiate tennis players and let's let them play here, and then next year we'll let them get into the U.S. Open. So more chances for collegiate players to try to make it out there on the tour. We're excited about this. The men's field, Greg Andrews from Notre Dame, Mitchell Frank from Virginia, been on our network, Marcus Giron, UCLA, Peter Kobelt, Ohio State, Mackenzie McDonald, UCLA, Alex Sarkisian of Pepperdine, Ray Sarmiento, USC, Clay Thompson, UCLA on the men's side. On the women's side, Christy Ahn from Stanford, Jennifer Brady, UCLA, Haley Carter, North Carolina, Alex Chacon from Florida, Danielle Collins, Julia Obaba, Virginia, Olivia Janowicz, Florida, and Jamie Loeb from North Carolina. We're very excited about this opportunity for these college tennis players getting their chance to not only play at the U.S. Open, but then getting a chance to actually make it into the U.S. Open. Well, one area I'm disappointed in here in this is, and this is what really irks me being a small college guy myself, what's the big deal about adding a Division II American or Division III American, the top NAI American or the JUCO American to this field? What's the hurt? Well, what's the hurt in inviting the Division III national champion up to the U.S. Open and allowing her to compete in this event? Well, what if you had 16 people? What if the other eight players were small college participants that got a chance to compete against these great Division I players? What would be the hurt? Well, wouldn't it gather more exposure for all the colleges in the United States of America? Listen, you've got a chance here. No matter where you go, no matter what situation you choose, you might eventually play at the U.S. Open. What a great recruiting tool for some of these top small college programs. I'd like to see more interdivisional activities participated in the division, in the ITA, in the NCAA. This promotes growth. Let's quit isolating ourselves. You know, it isn't about the money. It's about the experience. Tennis is not going to be a money maker. It is a non-revenue generating sport, but we can contribute in other arenas. And when you look at the lifetime contributions of tennis players to universities across this nation of ours, it will far, far outweigh anything that a football, basketball player can give to a university. These guys are running out of money by the time they're 40 years old. Tennis players typically do not run out of money when they're 40 years old. Now, the other thing coming out of the ITA, and I wanted to mention this before we get too far involved in this, and hang on, Coach Brian, I know you're there. College players at the 2014 U.S. Open, this is important. This is part of the reason that we have American players play American college tennis. Qualifying men's singles, we got Ohio State, Virginia, Tennessee, Illinois, UCLA, Auburn, Texas A&M, NC State, Miami, USC, all men's, sending men's participants to the qualifying rounds. And thank goodness that the USTA allowed some of these collegiate athletes to participate in the qualifying rounds. On the women's, four college participants, Georgia Tech, UCLA, Tennessee, USC. I hope that next week I have more good news to report as far as the status of these qualifying men's singles matches where I can actually mention their names into the draws. So I wish them the best, and I hope that they make it. All right. Now, we're going to bring in Coach Amy Bryant here. Coach Brian, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Welcome to the program. So excited you're here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Coach Brian, and I do this with all my college coaches, I am very familiar with Emory University. You guys do an outstanding job with your program out there. You've been there a teen number of years, 15 years. Coach Bryant, there are going to be people that listen to my show that have no idea who you are. So if you would, please start the program with a little biographical information about Coach Amy Bryant.
Well, I'm the women's tennis coach at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. This coming up will be my 16th season here. Prior to Emory, I was a college athlete, a Division III college athlete, actually at Emory. So I started coaching pretty young and haven't left. It's a great place to be. I love it here. And I've had some great experiences and have been very fortunate to mature as a coach at my alma mater.
Coach Bryant, that's truly the way that all of you tennis coaches introduce yourselves on this program. You're very humble, and I appreciate that. And I'm going to brag on you a little bit here, okay? And do a little research here on Coach Bryant. Now, correct me if I get anything wrong here. You weren't just a regular athlete there at Emory University. You were a two-sport athlete. Is that correct?
That's true. I did play soccer and tennis at Emory.
Now, you were a pretty good soccer player at Emory University as well, right?
Yeah, I was a striker for Emory and scored a few goals for the program over the course of my career.
A few goals. Now, you played, was it 3 years, is that correct?
I did. I didn't play my freshman year. I was a little misguided coming into college about what college athletics was going to be like and if I'd be able to do two sports. So my freshman year, I only played tennis and then realized that something was missing inside of me, and I really my whole life had played both soccer and tennis, and my tennis game wasn't really the same without my soccer game and vice versa. They're very complementary sports. So my sophomore year, I decided to pick back up with the soccer, and it was a good thing I did for my tennis game because my tennis game skyrocketed, and my soccer game certainly didn't suffer any consequences from the double sport action either.
Now, Amy, you very successful as a tennis player there, or on some successful tennis teams there at Emory University as well, correct?
Yeah, we started off my freshman and sophomore years being just an average, I would say, an average Division III program, and then over the course of my junior and senior year, just the talent level of the program increased. We started training a lot harder. The program was evolving. And my senior year, we won the national title, which was, in fact, Emory's first team national title in any sport.
And Emory saw something very special in you and said, "We got to bring you in as a women's tennis coach."
Yeah, it was a good story, actually, because I left Emory. I was a business graduate, and I thought that, I was very headstrong. I thought I was going to go on and work in the corporate world, just like many of my friends did who were in the undergraduate business school here. And so upon graduation, I started working at IBM here in Atlanta. I was a commissioned support analyst, and after about, it didn't take me long really to realize that I wasn't meant to be inside a cubicle or inside an office all day long. And so I stayed at IBM for about a year, and then decided to travel for a couple years and figure out what it was that I was meant to be doing. So I signed up for a Peace Corps type program, and in Israel, sponsored by the Jewish Federations of America, and went over there as one of Atlanta's volunteers. And it was a 10-month program, and I wound up staying for 2 years and had just an incredible time. I developed as a person, as an adult. It was just a real confidence-building time. And, of course, I did some amazing things for the community and the people over there, and came back and needed to figure out again what I was supposed to be doing with my life, because I really hadn't figured it out. And the tennis coach at Emory called me up and said, hey, look, you have a business degree. We really want to start a marketing program in our athletics program. So why don't you come and be the marketing director or marketing intern? Because it wasn't really a paid position. It was an internship position, so they called it an internship. And then at the same time, you can help out with the tennis team, because I would really love to have an assistant. And then, you know what, since tennis is mostly a spring sport, why don't you help out with soccer in the fall? So I came in, and that was my job. And then about halfway in, then I started working as a house mom in one of the fraternity houses. So I got free housing. So that was a little different kind of spin on what I was doing. But I lived in a fraternity house for most of my time as a quote-unquote intern and assistant coach. And then about 6 months into all of this, the head tennis coach left for personal reasons, and the athletic director asked me to step in on an interim basis as the tennis coach until they figured out what to do, and I haven't left.
Wow. They made a very, very, very solid choice in all of this. In my research here, you mentioned going into your 16th year. Coach, you have about an 80% winning percentage there at Emory University. That's an incredible job through the years. And this isn't just against Division III opponents. This is against everyone out there.
Wow, I didn't know that, but that sounds really good.
And according to your biography on your website, it says that you are the first female in any division to win and coach a national team championship. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think to win as a player and win as a coach, yeah, I think that is true.
So I've done a lot of things on this network and through these radio interviews, but this is a historical interview today for me. So I'm very excited.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was a women's coach for about 20 years, and admire what you guys do as a community college coach. We probably passed each other. I was at Lee College in Baytown. We probably passed each other at the small college championship a couple times.
Sure.
You have put your teams, if I'm right in this, in 15 seasons, 14 of those you had NCAA appearances, and now 9 of those you've been in the finals. That's amazing, Kate.
Well, I didn't know that either, but that's – thank you. That does sound pretty good.
What I really like about your story is that you have stayed at your alma mater, and you've helped the school get its tennis program. Not that it was in bad shape, but you have furthered it along and kept it going in the right direction.
Yeah, thank you. I really feel like our tennis program kind of follows the evolution of the athletics program at Emory, and that over the past, I think, 25 years or so, you can really see the rise of Emory Athletics and the recruitment of top student athletes, and our performance, our success rate and our performance has just increased, and the tennis program certainly has been has represented a nice segment of that.
Coach, now before we talk about this championship season, I'd like to visit with you just in general about Emory University. So can you tell me how many students go to Emory University?
So we have about 6,000 undergrad and about 10,000 total at Emory.
And you're located in Atlanta?
We're located just east of the city of Atlanta. It's probably a 10-minute car ride to get to the city. So it doesn't have the city feel of, a city college. It has more of a suburban feel. We're actually situated in the suburban area of Druid Hills, which is a beautiful area with beautiful old trees and beautiful old homes. And so we really have, the best of both worlds. We've got a city nearby, but we've got more of the relaxed feel of a town.
Well, now, as a student athlete, if you come to Emory University, what are some of the degrees you would be coming to Emory University for?
Well, you may have heard about Emory recently in the news in regards to Ebola, because they did send a couple of the Ebola patients to Emory Hospital. So the reason I bring that up is because Emory is very well known for its medical school and its work in the sciences and research and all of that. So pre-med is very, very popular here. However, it's certainly not the only way to go. We also have a very good undergraduate business program at Emory, one that rivals the Wharton business program. In fact, I believe the undergraduate business program at Emory might even be ranked higher than Wharton right now. I'm not 100% sure on that. There's also, and certainly not an afterthought, but our liberal arts program is phenomenal as well. A number of people will come in to study history, English, political science, international studies, the languages, I mean, all of that. They're all top-notch programs, and you can study liberal arts and go into anything, really.
Well, and Coach, do your athletes, they live on campus, they live off campus? How does that work at the university?
Yeah, Emory requires its freshmen and sophomore students to live on campus, which is nice. We have a very vibrant and thriving on-campus community, and my players do live on campus oftentimes through their senior year because the housing options are fantastic, and again, the community feel of Emory University is very nice and comforting and exciting.
Well, Coach, have you noticed that your tennis teams like to kind of live in the same areas, so close to each other?
Yeah, our tennis players, I mean, we spend so much time together that a lot of times what happens is by sophomore year, the girls are choosing to live together. But freshman year, we don't require the players to live together at all, but I do suggest that they try to room with other athletes because I do feel like other student athletes really understand the time commitment and the early hours and the late nights and all of that that are part of being a college athlete. So, they tend to pick good roommates for their freshman year that are non-tennis players and then from then on oftentimes choose to live together with their teammates.
Coach, your facilities on campus, how many courts do you have?
We have 12 outdoor courts on campus split up on two different sites on campus. We have a satellite campus as well that we can use for overflow. So if we're hosting a tournament, we would use that site. But then additionally on our main campus, we have 4 indoor courts.
Oh, nice. Very good.
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yeah, you one of the few small college programs in America that has access and use of indoor courts. I mean, the northern schools, they do, but being a southern school, I mean by that.
Yeah, we're very fortunate because it does rain here. We do have our share of rain. I wouldn't say it rains excessively, but we have our share of rain. So it's kind of nice to know that when we have practice scheduled, it's going to happen, rain or shine.
Now Division III different than Division I in regards, and I do this with each of the divisions that we encounter. Division I people say, we got 25 dates, we practice 20 hours a week, We have a fall schedule that's pretty full, a spring schedule that, you know, lasts from January through May. So can you help us understand the difference? You're allowed only so many weeks per year to participate, is that right?
Yeah, we're not too different from Division I, actually. We're allowed 19 weeks of practice time and competition time. So the way we split it up, and the nice thing is that you can split it up however you like. There's no requirement that you play a certain number of weeks in the fall and a certain number of weeks in the spring. So if your weather is determining when your season is, you can always use the weeks to your favor. So we split it up down here. We do about 7 weeks, 7 or 8 weeks in the fall, and then the rest of the weeks we put in the spring. So it winds up that we're practicing most of September and October, and then in the spring we're still going end of January through the end of May, because the 19 weeks are only counted in the main season. They do not count postseason weeks. So once conference is over, those weeks don't count. So we're actually in season about 5, sometimes 6 weeks more than those 19 weeks.
Well, Coach, in looking at your roster on your team, you had a fairly large team this year. Is that normal for you?
My optimal number of players is around 12. We just happen to have a lot of girls that are great contributors to our program and have stuck with it for 4 years, which is great because, you know, we love having players and supporters, and the more players that we have, the better we all get. So, it happens to be a larger number than usual, but imagine that in the next few years that'll get back down to 12.
Now, and this is just me trying to understand. I mean, you run one of the top Division III programs in the country. The athletes that you attract to your program, are these Division I athletes that did not go to school or take a scholarship? Are these people that sought out Emory University? How does this work for you, Coach?
Well, almost all of the players that are on my traveling roster could have accepted a scholarship somewhere. They're strong enough players to play for a scholarship. However, they made a choice, and that choice was to come to a great academic institution, first and foremost, and secondly, to play on a top program that trains hard and works hard, and their choice was really embedded in their desire to avoid having to sacrifice their academics for their tennis, or vice versa, their tennis for their academics. And so a lot of these players have sought me out, and they've sought me out because, or sought out Emory, because Emory's so well known academically, has a great reputation. And typically they are very strong students. And, you know, their guidance counselors are showing them, here's a list of the top 20 schools in the country. You are filling these requirements. You should definitely be looking at these schools. And then the players will look and say, well, you know, I'm a tennis player, too. I want to play in college. And then they'll get a number of schools that they kind of whittle it down to. And fortunately for me, a lot of times Emory's on that list.
Yeah.
And if they haven't sought me out, there is a fair amount of seeking that I do as well, going to the top tournaments and trying to, you know, get top juniors interested. And but it is a little more difficult for me on that end because I have to make sure that they're academically suited for Emory as well.
Well, Coach, we traditionally in the tennis world, we tend to be a little higher on the academic side of things in this, and it's encouraging for me to hear that you're visiting some of these better tournaments in the U.S. or recruiting girls to come to this outstanding academic institution.
Yeah, if you want to work with the best and you want to be the best, you got to go to the best tournaments and get those players. So I do travel to the Super National Clay Courts, the Winter Super National in Arizona, and then the Super National Hard Courts as well. And that's a minimum of the recruiting that I'll do. I'll also hit some regional tournaments and some coaching showcases as well, just to make sure that we're covering all of our bases.
And, Coach, as you travel through this and you get these wide array of players, I mean, your roster is all over the United States of America. I mean, you're attracting young ladies that are coming in and doing tremendous things for your school. Some of my Division III friends here in Texas mentioned that a lot of the advantage to coming to a Division III program is that you get more of the student life involved in the athletic life. Is that kind of your interpretation of it as well, one of the strengths of Division III tennis?
Well, I think Division III is a very big division. And so I do think that, yes, there are great players that choose student life over their tennis or other activities. But I also think that there are schools like us where we kind of say that academics is your top priority and tennis is your second, but it's a close second. So I'll support you in everything else that you do. You want to join a sorority? That's great. Go do it. You want to play in the orchestra? That's great. Go do it. Just make sure that tennis is coming before those things. And especially make sure that your academics is coming before those things. So every school is a little bit different in how they view that. Something else that I'm real supportive of is the girls studying abroad. I think that's essential, and that's probably across the board in Division III, I would say. But if you want to go in the fall or go in the summer. Don't go in the spring during our championship season. So there's, you know, obviously in any activity you choose, there's going to be sacrifices. We just like to put the tennis and the academics way above everything else.
And Coach, when I looked at your schedule, your fall schedule, not heavy laden with tournaments. I noticed, you know, two big tournaments that you have on there are your regionals and then the small college championships. The ITA does a real good job in the fall of putting together these two solid tournaments. I love the small college championships, and you had a very successful small college tournament last fall. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, we had a great small college tournament last fall. We had a freshman on our team win our regional tournament, and then she partnered with a transfer that we had from Wake Forest come in, and she and my freshman, Michelle and Rebecca are their names, they won the doubles, and Michelle actually wound up at small college winning the whole tournament in singles, and then with Rebecca, they I think made it to the final. No, they were in the semifinals. They lost in the semifinals. So, yeah, it's a great showing, especially for two rookies on our team, and you know, certainly a great precursor to how the entire team would fare the rest of the year.
Coach, now. I love the interdivisional idea of that event, so getting to see Division II, III, NAIA, and JUCO. And when you win your own division, then getting a chance to actually compete against those other divisions sweetens the pot, so to speak. After you left there, you actually continued on with that interdivisional play over at Georgia Southern. Do you like that as well? Do you like the interdivisional play?
I like good competitive matches. It doesn't matter to me if it's Division III, Division II, NAIA, you know, Division I, it doesn't matter. I just want my girls and my players to have the best possible competitive experience so that they can get better. Because, you know, our players come in and they want to work hard. I recruit players who are excited about working hard. both in the classroom and on the court. And a big piece of that is your competitive experience. So we go out and we seek tournaments and we seek matches against as many strong players and strong teams as we can, and that includes a lot of times D2s, D1s, and NAIAs. So, yeah, last year we played, and we're playing it again this year, an individual tournament down at Georgia Southern. And then this year we're adding in, or we also played a tournament at Georgia State last year. So both of those schools are D1 schools, and we got to play some good competition there. This year we're adding in a tournament against Georgia Gwinnett, which they were the NAIA champions this year, and they're hosting an individual tournament also. So we're guaranteed to get, you know, at least 4 weekends of great competitive play during our fall season, which is essential for us to kickstart the entire year.
Coach, are you one that brings in the players early to work them out or have them do practices, or do you wait till school starts and then let the kids get situated?
It's my understanding that compliance-wise, we're not allowed to bring them in early, unless we're using the fall as our traditional season, which we're not. Our spring is our traditional season because that's when the championships are. Now, there are D3 programs that use the fall because of weather, and they use the fall as their championship season. But then unless they play a certain number of matches in the spring, they wouldn't be able to participate in the NCAA championships. So we can't bring them in early. That's the long and the short of it. But we'll start shortly after school begins. And like I said, we go all the way through October.
Yeah. Now, are you limited on the number of dates as far as dual matches that you can play in the spring? Is it a 25 match rule, or can you play as many as you'd like for D3?
So, no, we have a 20-match rule in D3. So we have 20 dates to use, and we can use them however we like. One of the things that I've started doing, which is a little unique, and I would think that some of the top D3s will start doing this more, but I've started doubling up on days. So the reason for that is because in Division III, there's now a requirement that you play 50% of your matches as in-region matches. So they have to be D3 in-region teams, 50% of my whole schedule.
Wow.
Now, since Emory's down in Atlanta, there's no Division III schools in Florida. And the rest of the schools, you know, it's quite a distance for us to travel in our region. Our NCAA region actually extends all the way up to Pennsylvania, which is a little bizarre. But so getting in region matches is not always the easiest task. Plus, if I'm required to play 50% in region, then that significantly impacts and limits the amount of top competitive schools that I'm allowed to play. So, and like I told you before, I like to play the best schools that we can play, the D2s, the D1s, the NAIs, and that's not considered D3 in region. So what I do is I'll schedule 2 and sometimes 3 in-region D3 opponents on the same day. So I'm only using one date, but I hit my 50% mark, and then I'm able to schedule more matches out of region.
Well, Coach, you have some interesting guidelines there that you have to follow. And the location presents some interesting challenges for you, and you are definitely an overcomer in all this. You know, as your spring season started last year, your team went 12-0 to start the season. Did you play any of those 12 matches? Did you have to go indoors for any of those matches, or were those all outdoor matches?
Oh, I'm sure we had to go indoors for some of them. I don't think I've ever had a season where we haven't had to go indoors because of rain or extremely cold temperatures, which is rare. But I'll tell you, now that we have indoor courts, and we haven't always had indoor courts, but now that we have them, we are a little bit more spoiled. And once that temperature drops, you know, below 55, everyone's looking at everybody like, can we go indoors? But, you know, in the past we would grin and bear it. But yeah, we definitely play matches indoors. But I do like to think of ourselves as more of an outdoor team. And the national championship is typically played outdoors, so that does tend to work in our favor.
Well, Amy, is that a coach's decision there on the indoor courts? I mean, is that a shiver factor? I know, you know, you don't, if you're playing, hey, it doesn't matter sometimes, you know, after 20, 30 minutes what the temperature is. But as a coach, standing around in that shiver weather, that's not fun.
Yeah, we definitely coaches bear the brunt of it because we're not moving around as much. But there is a rule in the ITA rule book. I'm not sure exactly what the temperature is. It might be 55, where if there's one out of the two coaches that says, look, we need to go indoors, then you're required to go indoors. But if you both agree to play outdoors, it's fine.
So 12-0 to start off with. Really, the only big hiccup that you had was the February match against Columbus State, which was a nationally ranked Division II program. Not really a hiccup, I would say. I mean, that's a tough battle, right, Coach?
Yeah, we love playing Columbus State because they're great competitors. They're good sports. You know, they'll play us hard till the end, which is great. And we had lost to them the previous year pretty badly. So to come back out this year and play against almost the same team and to wind up winning 5-4, that was a real confidence boost for us because they had some really, really solid players. You know, we just played really well, and it was, again, it was really the springboard for the rest of our season because we just launched from there with a lot of confidence and you know, we knew we had talent, and we knew we had talent up and down the line in singles and in doubles, and we were ready to face whatever came our way after that.
Yeah, that's well, people don't understand. I mean, you know, and that is a you know, those types of wins, those are difference makers in the season. You lose a match 5-4 there. You're not really sure what happened. You win there. You continue on with a pretty impressive start here. And then I'm going to guess, and when I look at your schedule, that sometime around March 20th, around in there, spring break hit. Is that right?
Yeah, March spring break hits in the middle of March. Yeah, yeah, that's about right.
Because when I looked at your schedule here, there were two losses. Back-to-back, you played Lynn and Barry. Now, they're great programs, and I don't want to take anything away from Lynn and Barry. I know I've played Barry, and I'm not real sure if I played Lynn, maybe at the Blue Gray, but spring break, tennis, this is can be a time where you have a little bit of a letdown, Coach. Was this the case, or were you just bulldogged here? Were these two really solid teams?
I wouldn't say let down at all. I would, again, you know, scheduling those three matches that we did down in Miami, the other school we played, I think, was Nova.
Yeah.
And all three of those programs, I believe, are D2 schools. So we went down intentionally knowing that it was going to be a tough weekend. It was also the first weekend that we had that was three matches back to back to back. So we did it is very purposeful scheduling in order to gear us up for the postseason, which was nearing at the end of April. And we had some great competition down there. We had some great individual performances. While we lost as a team to both Lynn and Barry, we got our number six player didn't lose. She played tremendous. Our number one doubles team actually beat the number one doubles team from Barry that was a team that stuck together all season and wound up winning in their national championship final against Armstrong Atlantic. And Barry, incidentally, was the Division II national champion. So, and their players are just unbelievable. I mean, it was just, you know, unbelievable tennis out on the courts. But no, that was a great weekend for us, and it definitely helped us to keep things in perspective and helped to fuel us to work even harder as we entered the final third of the season.
Yeah, and Coach, now if I understand this right, you do play in a conference, correct?
We do play in a conference. We're in the University Athletic Association, which is a conference. It's very unique in that it's not a regional conference. So the other schools in our conference are located all around the United States. So, for example, the University of Chicago is in our conference, Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, Rochester and NYU, Brandeis in Boston. So very unique conference in that the schools are really – really separate. And the nice thing about our conference is that we're not required to play a certain number of matches within our conference during the regular season. Like a lot of schools have conference requirements like that, and we fortunately do not, because that would be a huge travel budget nightmare for us, at least, and additionally would require a lot more missed school. But it also allows me the flexibility with my schedule, again, to schedule who I like, and then we have one tournament where we play against all the schools in our conference, and the winner of that gets the AQ.
Coach, looking at your schedule, and I had Coach Hodges on earlier in the summer from Georgia Gwinnett, and he's doing an outstanding job over there with that program. It's a new program, and I just saw today they're going to add 3,500 students this semester to that college. You really kicked some NAIA butt this year.
Thanks.
did you give a good indication? I mean, as you travel through this with the victory over Columbus State, when you beat Georgia Gwinnett, which is one of the top NAIA programs, are you getting the sense that this team, this Emory University team, this ladies team, we've got a real good chance here to do something special?
You know, the thing is that every year I think we have a chance to do something special. So it's just a matter of if all the stars are aligned at the end, and if you keep everybody healthy, you keep everybody focused, you keep everybody motivated. And I think more of what I was feeling was about – I felt more confident leading up to Nationals than I've felt in a long time, because everything was just working out. It was like the puzzle pieces just kept fitting, and the team dynamic just grew stronger and stronger and was so positive. So everything just kind of fell in place. And so, yeah, when we beat Columbus State, when we beat Georgia Gwinnett, those were good wins, and those were great opportunities for me to see what we were capable of. It wasn't until the end of the season, probably early May, when I thought, all right, this is really, really special.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be my next question. Was there a particular match that, listening to you, that where you said, okay, girls, we really got a real good chance here? Because when you look at some of these results, and oftentimes when you look at results on a page, they can be deceiving, because you don't get the individual match scores and, three-set battles. They could have gone here, tie-break scores and doubles and so on and so forth. And I guess what I'm looking for here, Amy, is there a certain moment within that season of yours before you got into the conference championships, before you got into the NCAA championships, where whether it was the win or the loss, where you saw something in your team or in yourself that said, you know what, they're getting it, they're making advances towards championship type caliber performances here?
Yeah, I can't think of any particular moment, because one of the things that I try to do with myself and try to do with my team is try to keep us in the moment. So the second I start looking ahead, it's the second that I've found myself getting in trouble. And, the team definitely takes its direction from me. So the one thing that I just enforced with them is one match at a time, one point at a time. one game at a time. And we try not to look ahead and try not to think about what could be, but instead we just focus on what is and enjoying the moment and enjoying the process.
Amy, that little three-day conference tournament event that you held up there in, well, I should say down in Florida, you whipped upon those teams. You let them get one match. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it was a pretty dominating run for us. We had a good run the year before, too. And these are great teams. I mean, Carnegie Mellon's a strong program. Chicago's a strong program. Wash U is a strong program. There's some programs that are definitely on the rise, like Case Western and Brandeis. So I apologize if I forgot anybody, but, you know, it's a good conference competition-wise. But the thing that I can say about our program, and I say this with confidence and I say this with pride, is that we get better as the season progresses. It's easy, you know, you were talking about the slump before. Was this after spring break? Was this, you know, it's real easy to just look at the month of April and say, I got exams coming up. It's the end of the year. My grades aren't, you know, doing well. Or what am I going to do this summer? What am I going to do after graduation? So that end of season slump is just, you know, it's so... visible and just so palpable for a lot of players, and a lot of teams succumb to that pressure. And the great thing about us is I think that we just power on through it. And this team in particular, just it was like full throttle ahead, and we just, you know, just kept on going. It was like practices were equally as intense, and you know, we even added in some practices, and I think that really helped us. I think that kind of mentality saw us improving, even improving through nationals in May, but definitely improving through UAAs in April. And again, is part of the reason that our team and our players get better every year.
Maybe it looks like, I have the chance, you know, to interview a lot of national champions as we go through this, and other successful college coaches. The better programs out there seem to utilize their schedule in sort of a periodization type effect, where, just as you've mentioned, that in different parts of the season allow them to sort of experiment with different opponents, make the schedule a little bit harder, some areas a little bit easier. But always trying to build momentum towards late April, early May. Same scenario here?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, we do. I always try to take a week off in either early April or late March as well, just to give them a week off to decompress, no practice. And in fact, I encourage them not even to really go out and hit for that week, and just focus on your school, focus on your life, focus on yourself. And then we come back in and, you know, like I said before, just go full force to the end. But I found that breaks are essential in that periodization process.
Well, Coach, now this NCAA Division III tournament, this is a very big. When I look at the results, you have to go through a conference championship and then what looks like six rounds to get to that final. You did not have a first-round opponent. Did you have a bye? Is that right?
So we had a bye in the first round of regionals.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and then we played a couple teams here. We were fortunate to be able to host, and then moved on to nationals at the final site. Nobody gets a bye at the final site. It's three matches back to back, the final eight, and you play it out.
And in first 1-5 matches over, we move on to the next day. And it looks like you played back-to-back-to-back. Any injuries going into this that you were concerned about? Everybody healthy as you went to nationals, folks?
You know, our our transfer from Wake Forest had struggled with injuries all season long, but I wasn't concerned about it because I knew that she was able to do what we had asked her to do at Nationals, which was to play in the semifinals and the finals, only in doubles, and that was it. So I didn't have any stress at all about I'm sorry. I have a recruit coming in a few minutes and actually might be here now. So, but I really didn't have any stress about how everyone would perform and if everyone would hold up okay. So, no, I was okay with that. I went in knowing exactly what we had, and I think that's the best way to go, to know exactly what you've got.
Yeah, well, I have to ask on that day, and I won't keep you around much longer. I know it's 2 o'clock. On that day in that match that you play Amherst, the coach, as you go through your national championships, do you have a certain rituals? Do you eat the same place during the course? Do you have to have the same topping on a bagel, anything like that, as you go through your time at Nationals?
Yeah, we get real silly about things like that. We do, but honestly, this past year we tried to keep it on the DL and tried to just remember that our performance and our potential success was going to be a result of our performance and not because we ate a bagel every morning at a certain time. So we really tried to keep things in the moment and focus on the things that we can control and not the things that are out of control. And we knew that if we went out there in the championship match and played our best, then we were winners. That was something that we were confident in. It might not have resulted in the national championship trophy, but it was what we had been striving for all year, and that is to play our best all the way through the national championship. So,
yeah, Coach, you go second round opponent 5-0, third round opponent 5-0, quarterfinal 5-1, semifinal 5-1. You get to that final day, and I let people know you're ahead 2-1 after the doubles. Is it a pretty intense day that day? I mean, Coach, are you biting nails? Are you having to manage a lot of courts on that day? What's happening?
Well, I've got a great coaching staff, so we had it all planned out, who was going to be where. We're allowed 3 coaches on the court during a match. So I had a great assistant coach. I had a great volunteer coach. So the 3 of us were, very comfortable with who we were coaching and where we were. But honestly, there wasn't any, nerves. It was just, just complete confidence, complete pride, complete, just this feeling that, hey, this has been a great season. And knowing that win or lose by the end of the day, we had a great season. We enjoyed the process. We enjoyed every single moment of it, and we would be successful at the end of this particular day, regardless. So I felt really good.
Coach, you have a chance at the end of that doubles match, and you've got to take 3 singles matches. Did you have a feeling of which court it was going to be? Were you on that court, or were you just watching it as the matches unfold? How did that work for you as a coach?
I think every coach does that. They look and they try to count to 5. You only need 5 matches, and you try to count which 5 you're going to get. And in all my experience coaching, it almost never turns out to be the courts that you expect to win that win. So we had a great surprise at 4 singles. My player there, she was the first singles player off the court. In fact, she turned around a match that she had lost previously, same player, and I think she turned it around by the same exact score. I mean, she got beat pretty badly the first time they played, and then in the championship match she beat her pretty badly. We had a totally new strategy for the way she played, and I went into it thinking, well, I have no idea if she's going to be able to follow this strategy, how it's going to work, and it just completely worked in our favor. So that was a bonus for us. We weren't expecting that. And then our number one player came off, Gabby, playing against Jordan Brewer. They had played umpteen times over the course of their career. They're both seniors, and Gabby, I think, every time came out the victor in that. So we were definitely holding out hope for that match to be a victory, and while hope's not a strategy, we didn't really need too much of it, so that was nice. And then it came down to six singles. She was ahead. She was kind of rolling, and it took her a while to clinch the point, but I definitely was there to help her finish that off. And everyone else was doing great, too, just battling. Everyone was battling.
Yeah. Coach, Amy, with at the end of this match, your team clinches. There's a celebratory several moments there. Does Coach Bryant, does she get the bat?
No, I didn't. But I don't think I let go of the girl who clinched the point for a long time. So, you know, maybe they didn't want to get her too or whatnot. But I appreciate that my team did not bathe me. That was awesome.
Yeah, and did you have a group of fans there that had traveled, parents and friends and family that were there to watch the event?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a great tennis family here at Emory. It extends to the parents. It extends to the alumni. It extends to friends. So we had a huge, huge outpouring of support there. Great. It just felt so good to be doing this in front of everybody. And then, of course, with the live streaming that we have available now, it's so nice that our family and friends from home can watch and take part in it as well.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the team championship, Amy. You had an individual champion as well. Is this the first for Emory, or has this been done before?
No. We've done it before. In fact, Gabby had won it her sophomore year as well, so it was really nice to see her go out with the title again in her senior year, and, yeah, she played phenomenal. She was just so focused all year, great leader for her team, great captain, and just performed not just for herself but for her teammates, you know, just a great kid. And she graduated, so we'll be missing her, but yeah, it was real nice to end on that note. It was like icing on the cake.
Coach, you've got to be starting school soon.
Yeah, we got some players coming back in. Our freshmen move in this weekend, and I have to run. I'm really sorry, Jason.
Well, I got one of the two questions, quick questions, Coach, and then I'm going to let you go. First,
okay.
How many girls do you have to replace off of last year's team onto this year's team?
How many girls what?
You have to replace. I mean, how many girls did you lose?
Oh.
And then
yeah, so we lost two players. We lost Gabby, and we lost Brenna Kelly, who was their doubles specialist. She played in the doubles lineup all 4 years, and so both huge shoes to fill, not just performance-wise but leadership-wise. But we've brought in four freshmen this year, so and with the talent of our veterans, I'm pretty confident we'll be right up in the mix again.
Well, maybe the most serious question of the day. I, along with my son, am a huge Walking Dead fan. I know that it is filmed around that Georgia area. Do you take practices away from practice and go out and watch this great TV show filmed out there?
This is really going to hurt your feelings, but I don't watch that show, and I apologize, but I have to tell you, and don't take it personally, because my husband and I, we gave up cable a few years ago, and we really don't watch that much TV anymore. We have two little boys, so it keeps us occupied, and we do other things.
I can't believe that. I thought, just knew you were going to say we one day a week we skip practice, we go watch and all that. That's interesting. Well, Coach Bryant,
no,
I want to thank you. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, remember our priorities. The Walking Dead was not one of them.
Well, Coach, I want to thank you for coming in today. Listen, I'm going to expect that you and I visit again next summer. Okay.
Sounds great. I hope we do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, best of luck in the fall, and enjoy those young ladies, Coach.
Thank you. Take care.
Yes, ma'am. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Coach Amy Bryant. Amy is the head coach, like we said, there at Emory University. She is currently running one of the top NCAA Division III, and it doesn't have to be a Division III, one of the top NCAA university programs in the United States of America. She is taking tennis players that, as she mentioned, could take scholarships to Division I schools, and she is putting them on the path to becoming winners and national champions at one of the top universities in the United States. And she's doing it, and you can tell, with a great attitude and in the moment, letting these girls succeed and motivate each other and be a part of a great program. And just so excited that we got to spend some time with her today, and look forward to visiting with her again as we move her through this. I want to let you know that next week on the program, and we're getting close to September here, but next week we've got a special guest. This guest is going to be Bob Wood. Bob and I met here in Tyler. Bob is a participant in the Kalamazoo Championships with the boys up there, the 16s and the 18s, and he's going to come on and let us know about these kids that are going to college, what he's seen through the years, and I'm excited to share some of the stories that he's got, so we look forward to that. And hope you'll tune in for that live. I want you to get out there today and hit some tennis balls if you can, people. It is a glorious sport and a glorious day. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.